City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Mitchell Fain.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
Queer Cast, show number 590. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Mitchell Fain.
And as promised, Mitchell is on the couch with me this week.
I am. I'm so scruffy.
You're so cute, though.
I am. I have not shaved in like 3 days.
Yeah. Are you growing like the really long, John Lithgow beard? You know, he's doing King Lear. And
yeah.
He grew his beard since February.
I'm trying to, but unfortunately my beard, first of all, my gray is coming through. Mm-hmm. And secondly, my beard is really looks like pubic hair. It's like, I wish that I had one of those straight, sort of beautiful, silky beards. My beard, I look like a rabbi, right? Like, yes.
I'm still thinking about the pubic hair. I haven't stopped looking at your chin since you said that.
I look rabbinical.
You look rabbinical.
Don't you
think? But as it gets longer, I think it's going to...
It's just going to get
bushier.
Are you
going to keep growing it?
I am. Until there's some reason for me to stop.
I love it. Well, maybe we should like have people call in for reasons that Mitchell stops growing his beard.
Right, I'll do it for charity. I just look ridiculous, but I just hate
you.
Shaving.
Don't look ridiculous. You look adorbs.
Thanks.
I like you with a little beard. You can be my beard now.
I joke that I look like because you know I don't have any hair on top. It's all on my face. I look like those old kids' toys that are
with the magnet
shavings. Yeah, I'm that guy.
Then you are that guy.
I know.
But you're so much cuter.
Well, he was cute, I think.
You're svelte. And
I am svelte. I do have cheekbones.
You're very cute. So, you know, we were going to sit down, and I know we're both giddy, because we actually haven't talked about it, even in passing that much, about Provincetown and Rhode Island. But
right.
We are going to delay that podcast and maybe do that here in a couple weeks. Just because there's been some news that I know you and I have been talking about, and I feel like is just kind of a hot topic show, because there's just a lot of hot topics going on, and it's kind of like a toss up, like where do we start with you know, things we're letting go of or things that happened, or
you know, happy or sad.
But let's just start on an up, although I feel like the whole show is going to be up. So You Think You Can Dance, season finale.
It's such a good show. I love
it so
much.
It's my only reality show.
I love it.
Kind of
halfway
watching.
You don't watch Drag Race.
I do. I don't watch it seriously. I kind of watch it like I watch America's Next Top Model. It's like I kind of go in, go out.
Oh, you can do a marathon.
Yeah, or I can't do a marathon.
Oh, I love a marathon.
I can't do a marathon. But I can kind of, I'm not that interested. I have to fast forward through sometimes.
Oh my god, it makes me laugh.
Not RuPaul's, but
So You Think You Can Dance.
So You Think You Can Dance, season finale, and I hope, please pause right now and turn your sound off for like 3 minutes while we talk about it if you have not watched it and it's in your TiVo queue, because we're about to have a big spoiler. But You better work.
That's how he pronounces his name, You Better.
You better?
That's how he pronounces his name.
Ricky You Better?
Yeah.
Okay. Like, Ricky is the winner, the Ricky, cute little Cuban.
Yes.
Who looks like a hobbit.
Called it from the beginning.
I mean, didn't everybody though? I mean, it was pretty insane because he was
extraordinary.
I don't think they've ever had a show where they've had that many great dancers.
So many great dancers.
And yet there was one person who you just knew was in a totally different league. But honestly, sometimes the best dancer is an America's favorite dancer.
Right.
And that's definitely happened in years past. Right. But he won.
He's adorable. He's like a little hobbit. He's just like an adorable little hobbit. He's such a fierce, and I don't mean it like in the snap mm-hmm. fierce. I mean fierce as in like there's a ferocity to like the way he attacks every style, every genre.
Yeah.
I just saw him on the day after he won. He was on Live with Regis and uh-huh. not Regis, Live with Kelly and Michael.
Mm-hmm.
Regis.
I know. Dates us.
Yes, certainly does. But
you said Kathy Lee and Regis. It would really date, which is when I started watching them.
And then, he was asked what his hardest week was, and surprisingly, he said the week he had to learn the waltz. He said it was so hard. He said because you have to make it look so, it has to look so graceful and so simple, mm-hmm. and you can't show the work in a waltz,
mm-hmm.
right? Because it has to look so effortless. Mm-hmm. And he said it was the hardest he's ever. It was the hardest.
That's
which
so
is so
funny.
Interesting, you know. It's all about carriage, and
well, it's all about control. And when I think of Ricky, like there are definitely, I mean, if you watch that, you should watch the season finale if there's a way for you to watch it, because even if you've never watched the show, it was definitely a really
like
exciting show. And they had the winner of Australia, So You Think You Can Dance. It's
amazing.
Kind of like, you know, American Idol, the same producer. You know, so they've now franchised it out to all other countries. Now, that kid, I would say, is a ferocity. Like,
yeah.
He had so much power, tiny little thing, and just powerful. With Ricky, to me, what I always felt with him was, like, I felt like he was like water. I've never watched somebody that I felt like their body was so fluid. I mean, even if he was doing, like, hip-hop, you know, then it's just water being churned or something. But his water had such a body had such a liquidity to it.
I agree.
It just shocked me for a man. I don't normally, and not feminine.
Nope.
Water is not feminine. I'm just saying.
I sort of do wonder. I mean, you know, maybe it's not proper to wonder about his, you know, preferences or his orientation. But
well, he's 18, right?
He's 18,
he's a baby.
But
I'm sure he knows.
I assume that he's a member of our community on some level. And I think that that's hard sometimes on that show. There's this need to read, to not read gay.
You have to read masculine. They want you to dance
right.
masculine. Be able to dance masculinely.
Right.
They actually like when a masculine dancer dances vulnerably or...
Right.
And vice versa. You know, they tell girls, don't be so cute, don't be young, dance older.
Gorgeous.
You know,
Travis Wall choreographed that gorgeous quartet. Where the mm-hmm. was the two girls and the two boys danced together.
Then. I love.
I mean,
that
it was it was stunning and so brave. And Travis Wall, the choreographer. I mean, he's just everything.
You know what I think is amazing? I mean, about this year too. As you know, I'm an underdog rooter, and I love that both. I think it's the first year that both of the tap dancers made it to the final. And I think I was just sobbing so much by the end because Valerie and Ricky were the last two. Because they had started together.
Right.
You know, and I was just like sitting there
going, you have a little crush on Valerie.
No, I don't. I don't have a crush on her. I just think she is like Broadway.
Yeah, she's delightful.
Gold. I think she is Broadway
and
gold.
That Zach,
if she could sing, she is Broadway
I wonder
gold.
If she can sing.
I don't know. Who knows?
Well, one of the things that
and
he gets.
And Zach is my little heart on the show. Like, I just love
Zach. A lot of people
Zach.
Were rooting for Zach.
I mean, I just thought of. What was exceptional for me with Zach, and I can't remember the cute little guy that was such a good spinner who just went off right before.
Rudy?
No. Rudy's a whole different heart story. I love him, too. They had some really great personalities on the show this year. But, the really cutie, almost looks slightly Asian or Hawaiian, Filipino.
I'm not sure.
The guy with the great hair who could turn.
Oh,
He was cut right for
Casey.
The final four. Casey.
Casey.
I really felt like Casey, I really felt like Zach had more moments than Ricky, possibly just because all of Ricky's dances were moments.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But sometimes I thought, I don't know that he got the best choreographed piece always, but he was the best dancer on it.
And also, let's talk about it. Fans of So You Think You Can Dance, weigh in on this. Was this the worst year for costuming or what?
It was, which usually costume, makeup, hair.
Well, they won the Emmy for costuming.
Last year.
This just this past year.
Yeah.
But not for this season. For this season, it was dreadful.
Maybe they lost that costume, right?
It was dreadful. Mm-hmm. Almost every show. I mean, you know, full disclosure, Amy and I sit on the couch and we watch Thursday Night Naked Dance and sob like babies.
We do.
I mean, it just gets me.
Really care.
But I just love this. You know, I have this weird connection because I made this friend in my last cruise ship contract. One of the dancers on the ship, Josh, knows Ricky. They like did dance competitions together their childhood. Mm-hmm. You know, Josh is maybe 1 or 2 years older.
He's from Miami.
He's from Miami. Yeah, he's Cuban. And you better work, which I think has been the hashtag that's been going around, you better work. But it was super exciting. And I just am excited to see what this kid does because he also has a really charming, self-deprecating personality, right? A real, like,
he just seems really, really humble.
And he does.
He seems to really understand. I worked for this moment. Yeah. I deserve to be here, but I also can't believe it's happening.
That's what Michael Strahan asked him, you know, on the TV show. Like, how do you? I mean, like, what? How did you? Like, you know, that he said an unbelievable ability to stand on one foot and put his other leg completely.
Yeah, a planche.
You know, I mean, it's just
like
insane.
Doing a standing split.
Like a standing split, and he does it so effortlessly, and he basically just said, I worked really hard.
Yeah, you do. You just work.
Of course he does. I mean, how do you do that? I mean, anybody who's Facebook friends with me, my Facebook cover photo is the most extraordinary picture of him.
Oh, yeah.
In that position, you're just like, who?
Well, I love when Jesse Tyler Ferguson said, like, from Modern Family, he said, you know, me sitting on the couch in my sweatpants with, you know, like, bag of junk food, that's me comfortable. You comfortable as a planche.
Right.
Which is like...
He also said, oh, Ricky, you're so great. If you were younger, we could date.
Yeah, oh, Ricky. Oh, Ricky. So cute.
Sadly enough, you wouldn't have to be any...
No.
You wouldn't have to be any older for me.
Just right. Just barely right.
I mean, just perfect.
Just barely right.
I mean, Cuban and adorable and dancing.
Looks like a hobbit.
Anyway, congratulations, Ricky.
Come live in the Nook.
Come live in the Nook, man. If you're coming through Chicago, you've got a place to stay.
That's right.
Come to the Nook.
Come to the Nook. The rabbi would love to see you now.
Have you been bar mitzvahed?
Exactly. So, secondly, it's just been an eventful week, and we're pretty much just going to talk about the events of the week, seriously. Before we go to our news, because this is, I mean, a couple of these things, we're going to talk about our news stories, but Michael Sam, the openly gay football player, most people know footballs. We're recording this right before the first Sunday of football starting, and you know, we've obviously in the gay community, and I think people who don't even know much about football kind of know about Michael Sam, the first openly gay drafted football player, drafted to St. Louis, where he was from St. Louis for his university.
I went to a movie last night with my friend Book, who's a young straight guy from St. Louis, and he was wearing the Michael Sam jersey that he had bought.
Right, because the Michael Sam
He's like, I'm so psyched I bought it.
I'm supporting. But right, but like, you know, he was...
Well, now it's a collector's item.
Well, now it's a collector's item. He was it's the number two jersey in the NFL, right. You know, right after he was drafted, which is super cool. But all this brouhaha about how will he perform, how will he perform, he actually performed very well.
Very well. But in a crowded field.
Yeah, in a crowded field. He was seventh round draft pick, and he got released last week from St. Louis, only to get pretty quickly, immediately plucked up by the Dallas Cowboys.
Which is where he's from.
Right,
he's on their practice squad.
Yeah, he's on their practice squad.
But it's pretty impressive, especially for Dallas.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. I mean, I don't know a ton about football, but the Dallas Cowboys have always been flashy because they got those damn cheerleaders.
Well, you know what? I'm friends with one of the cheerleaders.
Are you really?
Jessica Montoya. Check her out. If you
current one or one of the
current,
old night... I want somebody to know one of the ones from the 1970
well,
or 1980.
Well, let me just say to you, go to my Facebook page and look through my friends and find Jessica Montoya, and you'll be glad you did. She's the most stunning creature, who also happens to have her MBA in business, by the way.
Yeah.
She's extraordinary. But yeah, so I think it's
very
interesting.
They've never shied away from attention in terms of football players. I mean, their coach down there, he, you know, I read one article. I don't know jack about football, really. But from a news story of this being, you know, an LGBT story, you know, everybody keeps saying they don't want the media attention. They don't want the media attention. He's good, but he's not so good that they want the media attention. Mm-hmm. You know, he was a 7th round pick, but then he performed. He outperformed.
He performed equally in these
preseason to anybody else in his position. I mean, he was pretty much an average.
There just was so many people that they're heavy
at the team at St. Louis.
The thing that I thought was interesting was with that ESPN reporter. I mean, she got chastised for it, and ESPN has since apologized. Made a thing about like his showering habits, which is so fucking bullshit.
It's such crap.
It's so bullshit that one of the guys from the St. Louis team said, he tweeted, ESPN, everyone is over it except for you.
Yeah.
And this is a straight football player who's in the locker room with Michael Sam. Everyone is over it except for you.
Yeah.
You know what? You're making it an issue. You know, if this kid's career is dependent on not having a media frenzy.
Right.
Stop making a media frenzy and help this kid out. If what you're really about is sports. Of course you're not. You're about making money. Now, on the flip side of it is, let's not be bullshit and stop pretending that the media frenzy doesn't sell tickets.
It does, which I think is really interesting. I think, like, well, why wouldn't a team want some of the attention? You know, all you have to do is go out there and start playing ball.
The only way I can see that would be a problem is that the attention on this rookie kid, right, who's on the practice squad, potentially can bruise the egos of some of the sort of major players who are working hard every week, you know.
Yeah.
And so, if anything, I think there's that frenzy creates tensions amongst the players, and so like the team cohesion. I don't know much about football either, but I do like to watch it. But
it just seems like it's the last bastion of like deep homophobia. But then,
it's intense. I mean,
but then I talk to people who have been on sporting teams, you know, their whole lives, who are like, you know, our age. And competing in sports, and are like, it's just not an issue for so many.
I think that that's wishful thinking. I think that, you know, we were just talking right before we started chatting that we're sort of blessed with having
a group of
friends, separate and together, of varying ages and professions and shapes and sizes. But they're generally a progressive lot, you know, even in their own world, you know, and I think sometimes it's easy to forget that we live in a little bit of a progressive bubble.
Yeah.
And you know, as I'm sure you do too, I have cousins or distant cousins or people from my childhood who are not as progressive.
Yeah, and I have that too.
And I think
unfortunately,
I think that's still a majority.
Well, and I'm glad to hear that too, because, you know, so many people tend to think that it's just because I'm from the South, or, you know, people always tend to think like, oh, we're more small-minded, we're more racist,
I mean,
we're more
honest.
Conservative.
They just did
we don't have...
They just did a map of the most racist and homophobic places in our country.
And they're all Southern.
And, you know, it looks like exactly like the Confederate States.
Yeah, I'm sure. It's all Southern. Although,
so let's not pretend that's
not true.
Although
there's some very loud and insidious quadrants of it in the Midwest. And,
I grew up in Rhode Island.
The white supremacists are primarily in the Midwest, you
know? I grew up in Rhode Island.
Yeah.
I grew up in Rhode Island, which is supposed to be this, like, Yankee, you know, liberal New England. And trust me.
Yeah.
You know, in Newport where you went, in Providence, sure. But, you know, you go outside of there and we're talking some backwoods attitudes.
Yeah. So, I mean, it is everywhere. But, yes, I think people in power, people that get stuff done, the public faces, I think, of the South, unfortunately, toe the conservative line.
I agree.
I think in other, like you said, like in Rhode Island, for instance, the people who are running the state, the people in power, are primarily more progressive people.
Ironically, I also read that the state that has the most lesbian couples raising children together is Louisiana.
That's interesting. I was going to say North Carolina. So that's interesting.
Isn't that so interesting?
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was so interesting. So, from political to personal, I think the thing is, I think Michael Sam is under... I think he's a hero, not just because he came out, because that's brave enough in the world that he lives in, and... coming from sort of a church background and all that sort of stuff, how tough that is. I think what's really interesting and will be very difficult and interesting to watch is how this young man deals with all of this. Because unfortunately,
when
you
are... He has a partner, which is good.
Which is good.
And
supportive
of
his family, supposedly.
And he also, he just needs to perform. He doesn't need to be the best.
Yeah, but Amy, that's the problem. He does need to be the best. Because that's my point, is that when you are the first of something, when you are a pioneer, you somehow, you know, in the way that, like, you know... Kerry Washington has to be a spokeswoman for all black women on television because she's the most successful black woman on television right now. Or Shonda Rhimes, every time she makes a choice about something to do on one of her TV shows, it's a thing.
It's
and unfortunately, people, the microscope is on Michael Sam and his behavior and how he behaves.
Yep.
Is he cool? And is he, does he get political and does he get defensive about, you know, people saying, you know, because when and if he takes the field as a Dallas Cowboy in a full season game and the crowd chants faggot, which they are going to do, to perform is not as simple as you're talking about. To perform
at
that elite level and with the pressures of that, the focus on how he responds to it emotionally and then being able to do his job must be enormous. And I think I personally am I'm crossing my fingers and I'm sending him love vibes and energy because I think unfortunately there's so much pressure on him to do it as opposed to just being a rookie on a football team.
Right, absolutely.
It's a lot of pressure.
And yet, you know, it, for him, he obviously weighed that it would have been more pressure for him to be closeted.
Yes.
And I think that's
the
thing.
That's what makes him a hero because he's
made
this choice.
That's what makes him a hero, right?
Right. Not that he came out, but that he came out knowing what he was getting himself into.
Yeah.
That's heroic to say, you know what?
Yeah.
I'm a better person this way.
Yeah.
And I know what's coming.
Right.
And I'll brave it. So we'll see, you know?
I am going to be watching and
I'm
see
a fan.
If he's,
I mean, I think
he gets pulled up to the team.
He seems like a nice
young
boy.
They need him. They said on the defensive line down there. So that's good.
Yes.
It's good. The passing of Joan Rivers was the news that came this week. And we're going to break for our news. And to tell you what's going on in the theater, Joan Rivers in our news story, a news story that changed literally moments before we were going to record this week. So Mitchell and I'll be talking about the loss of a whole heck of a lot of funny. In the past couple weeks. So we'll be back after this.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Week in News. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo is calling on the state to outlaw discrimination against transgender people, saying gender identity and expression should be included in the state civil rights law alongside race, religion, and disability. Cuomo said that if he is elected to a second term this fall, he will push to outlaw discrimination based on a person's gender identity or expression in the areas of housing, employment, and public accommodations.
Point Foundation co-founder Carl Strickland has died in a boating accident at Lake Tahoe, Nevada. Strickland and his partner of 17 years, Bruce Lindstrom, created the Point Foundation in 2001 as a means to provide scholarship funds to LGBT students. Since its inception, Point has provided more than $15 million in the education and support of its scholars.
A former trainee manager at a Little Caesars pizza restaurant in California sued the company for discrimination, accusing the Detroit-based chain of denying employees health insurance benefits for their legally wed same-sex spouses. Frank Bernard, 47, said he quit his job after Little Caesars refused to extend coverage to his husband of 6 years. The lawsuit names Little Caesars Enterprises and its parent company as defendants, accusing them of discriminating against Bernard on the basis of his sexual orientation in violation of California law.
The Fayetteville, Arkansas City Council has approved an anti-discrimination ordinance that includes sexual orientation and gender identity and expression by a vote of 6-2. The ordinance will take effect starting September 20th.
In Mississippi, the National Center for Lesbian Rights, or NCLR, helped file a complaint with the DeSoto County Sheriff's Department on behalf of a former student of Bethel Baptist School in Walls, who says he was sexually abused for 3 years by a teacher attempting to cure his sexual orientation. A former student, now 32, alleges that shortly after coming out in 1996, his parents turned to the local church, which ran a school it promised could cure their son. a teacher allegedly began subjecting White to weekly counseling sessions in which he regularly raped and sexually assaulted the teenager to convince him that being gay was more painful than suppressing his sexual orientation.
In San Francisco, a man who police said was beaten and left for dead in San Francisco's Castro District has been taken off life support. Police are now searching for the person responsible for killing Brian Higgins. Higgins, age 31, also went by the name Feather Lynn. He was a member of the Radical Fairies, a movement of gay men searching for a spiritual dimension to their sexuality.
The three couples challenging Utah's ban on same-sex marriage asked the United States Supreme Court to accept the state's requests to hear the case. Attorneys for the couples have said that even though they won at the district and appellate court levels, they intended to support the state's petition because the issue needs to be settled nationwide. The state argues that the ruling deprives Utah voters of their right to define marriage, as they overwhelmingly did in passing Amendment 3 in 2004.
In Florida, Charlie Crist overwhelmingly earned the Democratic nomination to challenge Republican Governor Rick Scott in his effort to return to the governor's mansion. Crist ran for the U.S. Senate as an independent in 2010 and is now a Democrat. Crist has the endorsement of Equality Florida, the state's largest LGBT rights advocacy organization.
In world news, the Queen of England has granted a royal pardon for internationally acclaimed British codebreaker and computer scientist Alan Turing. Turing took his own life in 1954 after being convicted 2 years prior of having consensual sex with a 19-year-old male. The pardon comes a decade after gay activists and straight allies lobbied the British government for a posthumous pardon for Turing, saying his conviction of gross indecency was an injustice.
In Ireland, an inquest has heard that a transgender woman hanged herself in Dublin. Nikita Keane, age 26, was found dead in her home in the Irish capital. During the inquest, her family demanded Keane be referred to using her birth name and with male pronouns, despite the facts that her name had been changed by deed poll and she was in transition. Last year, Trans Equality Ireland Network found nearly 80% of trans people in the country had considered suicide.
The leader of the Russian anti-gay vigilante group Occupy Pedophilia, who is alleged to have lured LGBT youth to abusive encounters through fake social media profiles, has been sentenced to 5 years in a Russian penal colony. Maxim Sergeyevich Martinskevich was convicted of inciting cases of extremism by posting videos on the VKontakte social network that contain racial slurs and extremist opinions on Russia's State of the Union. Anti-gay statements were not used against him. Other members of Occupy Pedophilia are currently awaiting trial for their participation in anti-gay crimes.
In Italy, a woman whose partner gave birth has been allowed to adopt the child in the first case of a stepchild adoption involving a same-sex couple in that country. The 5-year-old is the daughter of one of the two partners. The couple married abroad and have raised the child in Rome.
In South Africa, the brutal rape and murder of an 18-year-old woman in Ventersdorp, Northwest, may have been yet another incident of corrective rape. Gift McCall had been raped and strangled with wire in a shoelace, and a hosepipe had been shoved into her mouth. A 24-year-old man has been arrested in connection with the incident. Media have reported that approximately 30 lesbians have been attacked and murdered because of their sexuality over the past 15 years.
A sailor in Chile has become the first serving member of his country's armed forces to announce he is gay. Mauricio Ruiz, age 24, said that what was most important was not a soldier's sexual orientation, but his or her willingness to serve the country. Correspondents say attitudes are changing in Chile, especially after the brutal assault and killing of a young man in March of 2012 that sparked outrage and triggered a debate over hate crimes.
In entertainment news, it's been an eventful week for openly gay football player Michael Sam with the St. Louis Rams releasing him. The move came as teams across the league reduced their squads to 53 players each. In a series of tweets, Sam thanked the Rams for drafting him, for allowing me to show I can play at this level, and that he looked forward to building on the progress he felt he made toward a long and successful career. But just days ago, Sam joined the practice squad of the Dallas Cowboys, who are giving him a chance to earn a spot to help that team.
The latest star to join the cast of American Horror Story, Freak Show, is Matt Bomer, who appeared in Ryan Murphy's adaptation of The Normal Heart for HBO. But Bomer, coming off the recently ended White Collar, won't be eye candy. Viewers can expect him to be fairly twisted emotionally and possibly physically.
Comedy icon Joan Rivers passed away Thursday, September 4th. She was 81. Last week, Rivers was rushed to the hospital after she stopped breathing during outpatient throat surgery. She was in critical condition at Mount Sinai Hospital in New York City for just less than a week before passing.
Steve Carell is joining Julianne Moore and Ellen Page to star in a film based on the landmark gay rights case, Freeheld. We'll tell the true story of Laurel Hester and Stacey Andre, the couple who fought to amend the Domestic Partnership Act, which grants pension benefits to domestic partners of all New Jersey public employees. Carol will play the supporting role of Stephen Goldstein, a passionate advocate for Garden State equality.
The American Film Institute has selected Sophia Loren for a tribute on November 12th during its AFI Fest in Hollywood. The festival is also dedicating its branding this year to Loren by featuring a 1965 image of the star. The tribute will celebrate Loren's career and coincide with the 50th anniversary of her Oscar-nominated role in Marriage, Italian Style.
Openly gay director Lee Daniels has announced some of the cast for his Richard Pryor biopic. Mike Epps will portray Pryor, with Oprah Winfrey playing Pryor's mother.
Tony and Emmy Award-winning actor David Hyde Pierce will be part of the upcoming sixth season of CBS's acclaimed drama, The Good Wife. Pierce will have a recurring role as a highly respected cable news legal commentator who is so disgusted by the corruption and murder rate in Chicago that he decides to run for office in order to effect change. Pierce, who is openly gay, is best known for playing Niles Crane on the long-running TV show Frasier.
Alec Baldwin and Kim Basinger's daughter, Ireland Baldwin, made her red carpet debut with girlfriend Angel Hayes at the MTV Video Music Awards. Baldwin was there in support of rapper Hayes, who was nominated for Best Video with a Social Message for her song with Sia, Battle Cry.
And Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie secretly married at Chateau Miraval in the French village of Carence, where the couple has lived since 2008 on August 23rd. The couple's six children took part in the wedding. The ceremony came 2 years after the couple's engagement. And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
Hey, this is Levi Kreis, and you are on the Windy City Queercast.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Queer.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of September 8th, 2014, you are in Chicago's Culture Club. Through comedy, songs, and plenty of honest storytelling, one man takes an audience on a hilarious autobiographical journey through the chemical highs, devastating lows, and ultimately redemption from his drug-addled, sex-crazed life. Join About Face Theater in association with Justin Brill as they present Methtacular, written and performed by Stephen Strafford. Get tickets to Methtacular at aboutfacetheater.org, playing now through September 28th at the Theater Witch.
The Joffrey Ballet's Stories in Motion program features masterpieces by George Balanchine, Anthony Tudor, and Yuri Pozhakov. This limited Joffrey engagement is 4 days only, September 18th through the 21st, at the Auditorium Theater. For tickets, visit joffrey.org.
Many consider Terrence McNally the greatest gay playwright of his generation. In Some Men, McNally presents snapshots and characters from the 1920s through today that are hilarious and heartbreaking. For tickets to Some Men, go to brownpapertickets.com or visit pridefilmsandplays.com for more information. Some Men, presented by Pride Films and Plays, runs through September 13th. And for more Culture Club, visit windycitytimes.com.
Hello, Deb Pierce here, letting you know that we'd love to hear back from you. So go ahead. You know you want to. Post a comment.
So, Mitchell, you know, when I was prepping news for Kirk and I with Andrew, the managing editor at Windy City Times, you know, we were just kind of getting the details for Joan Rivers, you know, being in critical condition. Mm-hmm. And then literally right before we recorded the news of her passing. You know, I guess on the heels, on the, you know, 2 week heels, I guess it's been 2 weeks of
Robin Williams.
It just feels like it was interesting last night because, on Thursday night, it was interesting because I was watching Jimmy Kimmel and he had Sarah Silverman on, you know, who's probably already scheduled to like do something funny because she's got her album coming out and just won the Emmy.
Right.
You know, would have seen Joan Rivers at the Emmy and Emmys.
And she had my favorite tweet.
Oh, yeah.
Her favorite,
that was during the week, though.
During the week when she said, Joan, we have a gig coming up in 2 weeks and I'm not doing it alone. You're being ridiculous.
Right, right. And I mean, you know, as a comedian, what did they both say? You know, like it's just like, you know, it's not like they had huge, deep, sentimental moments about it because they were funny, you know? I mean, rightly so. I mean,
right.
You know what
funny.
I mean?
They're funny. That was the thing. That was the thing that blew me away this past week. You know, because I make a big part of my living around funny people, right?
Right.
So, you know, we are our own breed. You know, I don't think
that's right.
Same league as Joan Rivers, but like we are our own type of personality, right? And so how we deal with stuff. So I've been so moved by so many of the tweets from different people. You know, Chris Rock, Seth Rogen. Mm-hmm. You know, not just the ladies, of course, mm-hmm. but the guys being like, "Whoa, no, we need Joan. We need way more Joan." You know, and I think what we're becoming aware of this week, because I think for a young generation, she was the old lady on the red carpet, you know, with the facial surgery. And I think an awareness of the way in which she changed. I could get emotional because she was such a huge part of my childhood, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The way she changed the game in so many ways mm-hmm. has been reflected in what Mel Brooks tweeted after she passed, or Lena Dunham, you know.
What did
my favorite thing about Lena Dunham's tweet was this was during the week when she was before she passed. She said, because famously recently she took Lena Dunham to task on Fashion Police and said uh-huh. something about her clothes or her mm-hmm. thighs, and said there's a big article, did Joan Rivers body shame Lena Dunham? So her tweet was, yeah, being ripped a new asshole by Joan Rivers is a treasure forever.
Mm-hmm.
Get up, Joan, we need more Joan, right? So so then when she passed, Lena said, you know, she was a legend and it was an honor. And she said, and then she tweeted, having said that, we know that there will always be a piece of Joan with us, her nose, because it wasn't real.
Uh-huh.
And you know, the idea that like now these comedians are making these snarky jokes and it's genius, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because Joan Rivers mm-hmm. would appreciate it. I was interviewed by my friend Sheila O'Malley
mm-hmm.
For her blog, SheilaO'Malley.com. Also, if you go to RogerEbert.com, mm-hmm. she wrote a gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous piece. I recommend you go. Or go to SheilaO'Malley.com and read. She interviewed me about mm-hmm. Joan Rivers. And did you read it?
Yes.
And
I want you to tell everybody about it.
Well, it's on SheilaO'Malley.com. You know, look it up. It's the piece about Joan Rivers. And we talked about how Joan changed the game, you know?
Yeah.
It's... And yes, specifically for women. But the thing that made Joan Rivers extraordinary, and I think, and I get it. She said mean things and she called people fat and she said they looked ugly.
Mm-hmm.
And she, and I get that we're supposed to live in a kinder, gentler time and political correctness, blah, blah, blah. The thing that Joan Rivers did was she took the monster from under the bed.
Mm-hmm.
She exposed it and then we could all laugh about it. If mm-hmm. Joan Rivers picked on one group of people
mm-hmm.
more than another group of people,
mm-hmm.
then she would have been a mean old lady. That's mm-hmm. not who Joan Rivers was.
No.
She's always been taking the thing we're not supposed to talk about, we're not supposed to mention, we're not supposed to say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a testament to the fact that she and Liz Taylor were dear, dear friends to the end of Liz Taylor's lives. And she made a career in the 80s of telling fat jokes about Liz Taylor.
Right, right, right.
I mean, Joan Rivers made the monster smaller. She could talk about menopause. She could talk about sagging tits. She could
mm-hmm.
talk about Lena Dunham's thighs, right? She said the thing we were all thinking and we don't have the balls to say. And it's not just about saying it. It's about saying it with finesse and with craft, right? Mm-hmm. So Joan Rivers, I just read a bunch of her quotes, and one of them was, she said something like, my vagina is like Newark. Men know it's there, but they just don't want to go. She's so hilarious.
If you have not watched the Joan Rivers documentary,
piece of work.
What a gift.
What
a gift.
Who knew it was going to be such a gift?
What a gift that that filmmaker, who I believe is a gay filmmaker.
It's two straight. It's two straight girls.
What's their connection? I can't remember because I haven't seen it in a while. But
Ricky Stearns, who I actually know, I met at the Newport Film Festival. My friend Rachel Hamilton worked on that film as well.
Oh, maybe that's it. Yeah. I knew something was connected to something.
Yeah,
which is you.
It's an extraordinary. Yeah,
but because you're the Kevin Bacon, and if you're not, then it's me. But yeah, like what a gift that film is. And if you've not seen it, it is extraordinary. You don't have to know anything about her. You will know about her. And not only will you know about her career, but you will know about like her heart, her soul, her craft. And
her determination and what it takes to be successful in a business that doesn't want you to say, fuck it, I'm doing it anyway. I mean, there's so many lessons in Joan's life. And I as a young, and for the queer community, I mean, I just saw a clip. I just watched a clip just 10 minutes ago before I came downstairs of her on her show, early 80s, and her guests were Sylvester, you know, You Make Me Feel Mighty Real, and Charles Nelson Reilly.
Oh,
and
wow.
Sylvester came on, he's saying, they're talking, they're chatting, he's in full drag or half drag, whatever. Mm-hmm. So she's sitting on her talk show in 1987 with two queer men, one who's, on some spectrum of trans and in some spectrum. Mm-hmm. And Sylvester stops the conversation and says, hey, I want to thank you about, and he acknowledged, and this is early, this is 83, that early on in the AIDS crisis, Joan was one of the first people to stand up and say, hey, something, we need some help here. Something bad's going on.
Yeah.
And she's always been on our side, and she's always been, she's the first one to make fun of us, and she's the first one to defend us.
Yeah.
And as a young queer kid, I mean, I was a Jewish queer kid, and I, in a town of tough Italian people, and Joan Rivers' kind of humor, crafting a joke to get everyone to laugh with you and to laugh at all those things, without being overly dramatic, saved my life in a lot of ways. You know, I could put on that album, you know, What Becomes a Legend Most. I mean, I wore that motherfucker out. I mean, I knew it by heart. I mean, you know, when you're a little kid and you can do a Joan Rivers imitation, A, you know you're queer. And, but she just, I think she meant so much to so many people because she had the balls to say shit.
Well, and I think, you know, she is definitely a queer ally. I mean, she has been
one of the biggest
from day one, and for HIV AIDS. And you know, I met her. What year was it? 2002, 2003, 2004 You know, my ex's brother was is married to Michael Feinstein, so we had gone to Feinstein's on the Regency, you know, and frequented the Feinstein's at the Regency, for Michael Feinstein was Regis and Joy Philbin and Joan Rivers and Liza Minnelli,
right.
And you know, I used to say it was like all Michael's old ladies, you know, Judge Judy like married he and his Michael and Terrence, and you know, so this is like his tribe,
right.
You know. I mean, he was really, really good friends with Rosemary Clooney, was essentially his godmother, you know. I mean, these are the women of every gay man would want to have had his tribe, right? You know? And Susan Lucci.
Rosie Clooney, Susan Lucci, Amy Matheny, Joan Rivers.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you for putting me in that. I haven't quite aged that much, but,
no, but
I would like to
but
be
you
that
did
much
have your eyes
diva.
Done. No, she did not.
But yeah, so I did meet her very, very briefly. I was overwhelmed by her size. She's
tiny.
Like she and Susan Lucci, like their legs are the size of my arms. Tiny, you know. But I will say, I've always said this kind of as a joke. Like she was kind of Joan didn't stand upright. My perception of her was that she was not a person who stood vertically. She stood at like a 2 o'clock. She was always tilted forward.
Funny you say that. I've been watching all these videos. I spent a lot of yesterday watching videos, and she is always tilted forward.
She is tilted forward. Her body, and you know, I mean,
it was almost like screaming, "Deal with me, see me."
It's exactly right. See me. I mean, I laughed and said she looked like when you're downtown in Chicago and it's a very windy day and you're walking
and you're braced
and you're braced and you're leaned forward. But I said, you know, and it kind of just, her face looked like that too.
Right,
like
she was being
just blown, like she was blown backing up. But I feel like it's such a great metaphor after I saw that documentary, because the documentary I didn't see, you know, 9 years after I ever met her. And it was a small room. It was a room of like, you know, there were maybe 70 people in the room. Uh-huh. So the people in the room were like the people in the room, like Helen Gurley Brown was in the room, you know, the first editor of, you know, Cosmopolitan magazine. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's an old lady with lots of, well, I think she's passed away now, but plastic surgery too, you know. And but now, having seen that documentary and understanding, like, you know, when she was bummed that she lost a gig from Kathy Griffin, or
right,
seeing the, like, the old library, which many young people won't even know, but the old library, you know, card files filled
her
with her jokes, you know, and the just the persistence, the
working,
dedication.
Cooking to Tony Danza.
Yeah.
Right, that's one of them, is C to D.
Yeah.
Cooking to Tony Danza.
Jokes from cooking to Tony Danza.
Literally, that's the yeah, file card.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
Brilliant. So, you know, you just kind of, that to me, like, leaned in at 2 o'clock is kind of, to me, Joan Rivers.
What's
like, whether she was pushing against the world, whether she was fighting, whether the wind was blowing at her and she just kept going.
She was a fighter.
She totally was. I wonder if they'll re-air her roast.
It'd be interesting, because she was sort of disappointed in the roast, because all they talked about was her surgery, which I get, it's super funny and she gets it, but she was like, haven't I done anything else that's yeah, worthy of being made fun of?
Yeah.
Mel Brooks, one of his... He tweeted yesterday, it really moved me, and I'm paraphrasing, but basically he said, she was the bravest of us all.
Yeah.
She was the bravest of us all, and we all knew it. Mm. I mean, I remember this was years ago, I talk about this a little bit in my interview with Sheila, in that there was this some talk show, some round table discussion, and it was all these young hip comedian dudes sitting around talking about other comics. They'd throw out names of other comics, you know, like, oh, Pryor, Carlin, and somebody threw out Joan Rivers, and they all sort of sat back, all these young dudes, right, who, you know, she was never, one of her issues was she was never invited into the club. She had to make her own club.
Yeah.
And the way that these guys were like, well, basically you do not want to fuck with Joan Rivers. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you've ever been in a room with... I can't remember who it was. This was years ago. But what you don't want to do is get into a battle of wits with Joan Rivers, because she's going to win,
mm-hmm,
right? And you think she's this old lady and the fashion police and the carpet. And then you realize that she was, to the very end, sharp as a tack.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like Joan Rivers lost it.
Oh, no. Joan Rivers, I mean, didn't expect to go out. I mean,
no.
She was just on the Emmys the week before. So, I mean, people...
I mean, just her last episode of Fashion Police, where she did double duty for VMAs. It was a 90-minute, the VMAs and the Emmys, because they were back-to-back. Oh, my God. Some of the shit she says, you can't...
I think Sarah Silverman said, I talked to her the day before she had the... she talked to her the day before she had the surgery, because she called her to congratulate her on the Emmy.
Oh.
You know, and she said that she was that girl. I mean, she was that gal, you know, who would call you the day after.
I was saying the book last night. Yes, exactly. Well, that's the thing that people talk about. I don't know if you saw Jimmy Fallon last night. That's something to Google, to YouTube. Jimmy Fallon got all choked up talking about her, because he told the story about, on his first night, you know, he made a joke that he bet all of his friends $100 that he would host the Tonight Show, you know, ha, ha, ha. And so on his opening... On his first night, he had all these celebrities come out and put $100 on his desk,
right?
And so they asked Joan, you know, because he broke her chain, because she hadn't been on The Tonight Show.
Oh,
since Carson, right?
Oh, right?
And so he broke that.
Oh, huh.
Yeah, and so she came out, and so, it's going to make me cry, instead of giving $100, she just came out and gave him a kiss and a hug.
Aw.
And her sort of reputation being... You know, the duality of her comedy being, you know, like a pit bull. I called her the I called her Will Rogers as a pit bull because she was commenting about society. It was fierce. But her reputation for kindness and the respect of her peers has really been so interesting.
I think you see that in her documentary too, though.
Yes.
Which I think is that great beneficial. Scene,
you know, the way Louis C.K. has her on his show. And
yeah.
The thing that I'm hopeful about is that she... People keep publishing this quote. I think it was from her most recent book about what she wanted her funeral to be like.
Uh-huh. Say it's going to be a big deal.
Well, she wants it to be a big deal. I mean, she wrote this funny thing where she's like, I want Meryl Streep crying in 5 different languages. I want wind chimes. I mean, you know, she's like, I want Bobby Vinton singing. Such an old reference.
I hope that it's an event that they produce in air.
They need to make it a deal with unabashedly show-busy, like over the... they need to.
Yeah.
It will be so satisfying for people.
It will be.
It will be cathartic.
Did she ever win the Mark Twain Prize?
I don't think she did.
See, that's shocking to me. I mean, I'm not saying that somebody like Tina Fey doesn't deserve it, but for Tina Fey to get it when she's like 40 and somebody like Joan Rivers never to have gotten it,
here's the deal. Let's be honest. She wasn't alone. There was Carol Burnett. There was Elaine May. There was Phyllis Diller. But without Joan Rivers...
But I think Carol Burnett has won it.
I'm just saying that without, you know...
I think she won it recently.
The most powerful group, the most powerful SNL sort of, I think, in the past several decades has been when it was all the ladies, you know? Mm-hmm. And they're all direct descendants. I mean, Rachel Dratch tweeted about it, you know? They're all direct descendants of Joan's bravery.
But I really feel like the only person I think that has picked up the Joan Rivers mantle is Sarah Silverman.
Sarah Silverman, Kathy Griffin...
I don't see Kathy Griffin. I know people want to compare the two, but I don't. Here's the difference I feel about Kathy Griffin. I feel like Kathy Griffin, and I could be totally wrong, but she does not lead with... she leads with other people being kind of her wall.
Yeah, I see.
And I think that Joan Rivers has no wall.
No wall.
She has no wall. And I don't think Sarah Silverman does either. I think she is... has no filter. And I feel like with Kathy Griffin, she is our friend saying the thing about the other person that we want to say.
Yeah.
And I think Joan just says, do you understand the difference?
I don't know. I'm not articulating it very well.
Maybe you can articulate it better.
I definitely think Sarah Silverman is a more direct descendant, but Kathy Griffin's career wouldn't have existed without a Joan Rivers.
No, and that's totally true. And there are a lot of other people too. I mean, absolutely. You know, but
there's
a great clip
of Joan hosting the Tonight Show. If you you know, go into YouTube and you start to go down a rabbit hole of Joan, it's a clip. I think it's 1983. She's wearing a sort of a purple caftanish.
Mm-hmm. I loved her in the caftan.
Click on that. That monologue is so brilliant, and it so holds up. And it's like it's right in, like, she's talking about Heidi Abramowitz. You know, she her mm-hmm. friend who was, you know, she made up this friend who was a whore, and you know, she bought a car. She wants to know if the front seat was optional. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the jokes about, like, you know, Elizabeth Taylor's so fat she puts mayonnaise on an aspirin. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, it's that era that can we talk?
Yeah.
You know, she talked about the queen. She go, is she here? Is she here? Oh, grow up. You know, that whole era.
Grow up.
It's amazing how this monologue holds up.
Yeah.
I mean, it's 30 years old.
Yeah.
31 years old. I just know that for me, Joan Rivers' voice was a voice of... I guess, in a weird way, it was a voice of freedom for me because I, as a young queer kid, I had a lot of things that I thought and a lot of observations that I felt like I wasn't allowed to share or express because I looked around and the world was not particularly welcoming to me. Mm-hmm. And the world wasn't particularly welcoming to Joan. And she said, fuck it. Mm-hmm. I'm doing it anyway. She was never... that was one of her big things, is that she was never invited in. You know, whether it was Second City, nobody ever said, hey, come have a drink with us after. Or when she was performing at the same time as Lenny Bruce and all those guys, they all knew that she was formidable, but they didn't invite her into the club.
Yeah.
You know? And I think Joan made her own club. And I think for us, a little queer boy in Cranston, Rhode Island, her voicing stuff gave me the freedom to say, I can be and say whatever that I damn well please. And it saved my life in a way.
Yeah. I think she definitely is... you know, in the same way of the Oscar Wilde, of the, you know, the generation of people who speak to society, that is a queer way of speaking
yes, a
to
queer way
of speaking to society.
The
and
queer
I think
way.
She kind of did that.
Welcome to the Queer Way with Amy and Mitchell.
That's right. Hey, we've got to wrap this one up, but we do want to say another news story that came in right after recording is another victory here for marriage equality in the Midwest when the U.S. Appeals Court in Chicago released a unanimous 3-0 ruling against the marriage equality bans in the neighboring states of Wisconsin and Indiana. So we're going to hear a lot more about this because the response came very quickly.
Yes.
Of course, there's always now, immediately the opposing side's going to, whips in with their legal documents, yep. However it goes down. So that they are, highly anticipating that this case will head to the U.S. Supreme Court and that this is really possibly going to be a very big decision that's going to have a strong resonance on the whole national debate over marriage equality.
Wisconsin and Indiana? I mean,
yeah,
honestly.
Exactly. So we'll have more on that next week in our news.
Also, I do want to say just an acknowledgement, a rest in peace to Chicago broadcast legend Roy Leonard passed away yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
And I've met the man many times.
Yeah.
He's a lovely man, and I'm good friends with his son, Kelly, and just love to his family. And Roy Leonard was a Chicago...
A legend. A national legend.
Yeah, I mean, the man made his mark on this world, and he was an elegant and kind man.
Yeah, absolutely.
So rest in peace, Mr. Leonard.
Oh, a lot of voices leaving. It's why it's important that we keep ours alive and out loud.
I'll tell you what, Joan taught me to be loud. Thank you, Joan.
Live loud, live proud, just like Joan. And we'll be back next week. The LGBT International Film Festival is coming to town, reeling their 32nd year. I'll be on with their program director to help you determine what are the hot new movies coming out for the community. And so you can start planning your schedule of great LGBT films to partake in and get to see what a luxury that we live here. Have a great week, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast, queer and now.
I say, hey, baby, better run away.